Hello, Sai, and welcome to Comic Book Athens 2018.
Thank you.
So, how do you find our little convention so far?
Oh, it's not so little, you know. I didn't know what to expect. Weirdly enough, last weekend I went to the first ever comic show in my hometown, which is a tiny little village called Margate, just outside London, and it was extremely small. So, this is massive by comparison. It's lovely. It's really, really good. It's a really good mix of people. It's youngsters, adults, every shape and size, all genders. Yeah, it's a really good crowd. Really enjoying it so far.
So, I have to ask, because I, of course, checked in Wikipedia and everything, and it says that you have previously worked as a cook, a bookseller, and an art director?
Yes. Yeah, it's a weird mix. So when I was a teenager, I was like a chef in just a kitchen. It's like a Saturday job, not really a cook. Here's the problem with Wikipedia, is you don't get to tell people when they've written it wrong. Yes, I did some cooking, and then I ended up going to film school, so I was all sort of set to be something in film. I didn't really know what. I knew I enjoyed screenwriting. I did my major projects on screenwriting. But while we made sort of student pieces, student movies, I found myself enjoying doing the production design. And straight out of university, needed a job. Just happened to stumble into this job with a quite well-regarded production designer for a production company that worked with the BBC. And had a lovely time for about 6 months, and then got a really big job doing a TV show. And I was, I think, 21 at the time. And I was in charge of a crew of props guys and art directors, all of whom were sort of in their 50s and 60s, and they'd been doing it for decades, and they did not appreciate this snotty-nosed 21-year-old coming in and telling them what to do. And I was quite good, I think. I was sort of making suggestions rather than telling them what I wanted. But yeah, it ended. There was a really horrible day when I was bullied quite mercilessly by DOP, director of photography, and it was like the most embarrassing day of my life. Everybody in the crew was sort of laughing and pointing. It was one of those. Well, I was pretty grim. It was one of those moments you wake up in a sweat for years after. So I quit straight away, and at this time, luckily, I had been doing some Future Shocks, which were little self-contained kind of twist in the tale stories for 2000 AD. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm really enjoying that, and I think I'm okay at it. So let's see if I can make that into my career, because dealing with other human beings is clearly not something I'm very good at.
So writing started parallel with all the other works.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Did you always started like in you from when you worked as a chef? Or?
Yeah, actually, I mean, as far back as when I was very early at school, I was always doing, you know, creative writing projects and writing little short stories and things. I didn't really discover comics until I was, I don't know, probably 13 or 14. I didn't get into them as a younger child. And with the sort of arrogance of youth, the first time I read a comic, my first thought was, well, this is good, but you know what, I could do this too. It actually took me a long time to prove that to myself, but yeah, I got there in the end. It took a long time, a lot of tenacity.
So about your characters, they all, can I say, crazy a little bit, starting from Six Gun Gorilla, Jack Point, Harry Kipling, Legion, of course, mm-hmm. Lobster Random, monstrous, crazy, like strange guys.
Yeah. I sort of, I seem to, it's not intentional, believe it or not. I just, I tend to, I don't know, I guess it's a challenge whenever I am given, sometimes it's a task, you know, with, for instance, like X-Men Legacy with David Haller, Legion. They'll bring me a character. Will you write something about this existing character? Sometimes it's a character I'm coming up with for myself. In either case, I think the reason it happens is that I'm challenging myself to make a complicated character into somebody quite likable. or if not likable, at least relatable. Because I believe every human being is very, very complicated, and there's nobody in the world who you can't find something a little bit unusual about, a little bit weird about, if you delve deep enough. Mm-hmm. So it just happens naturally. I gravitate to the strangeness of a character and then worry about what makes them normal. And actually, it strikes me that the majority of my characters are strange people trying to pretend that they're normal.
Yeah.
And actually, that's, I think, all of us all the time.
And nobody's quite realistic. They all live in a, like...
They're quite absurd sometimes.
Scenery and...
I think I'm drawn to absurdity whenever I've done very straight down the middle, hard realism. There's always been something a little bit wacky about it, or something that doesn't quite fit, because that...
Like Weavers. It was a mob story, but it was off the charts again. Sure. It was like it drifted away.
Yeah, and I guess there's a part of me that is responding to one of the superpowers of comics as a medium, which is that when you are liberated from constraints of budget, then why would you adhere to reality? It's not like I have to pay Industrial Light and Magic to do special effects. The artist gets what the artist gets. So as somebody who responds to magical realism, absurdity, tales that don't necessarily fit quite neatly within the reality box, why would I not make the most of this opportunity to do something a little bit strange and a little bit different? Occasionally, I have done a story which is straight down the middle, but not always. And whenever I've tried, I've always ended up kind of fudging it and sticking in something a little bit stranger instead. I don't know, I think it's a reflection of me rather than what I think the readers want. Something like that.
And in the same kind of, in relation, your world building is also very impressive in your comic books, I think, in my opinion.
Thank you.
So the Spire and Zelig, God Save, everything have their own unique, strange world. And I think I read somewhere like you start with economy of the world, like what coins do they use? Mm-hmm. What do they use? So you figure out the whole world from, and you start from that.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, that's how it's been with things like the Spire. Yes, with things like Coda, which is the series I have coming out next month, definitely. With Godshaper, it's all about the economy of the world. The deeper, simpler way of putting it is that I like to imagine worlds that feel functional.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's because they have a interesting economy or whatever it is that makes them different from our own world, they should feel like when you shut the book, the world keeps happening. It's not, it doesn't exist only because the story is taking place within it. And a bugbear of mine, a problem that I have with a lot of genre fiction is that writers create worlds specifically to tell a story. And then the story, the stakes of the story are world-shaking. It's like, well, I've created this world, therefore the story has to be a threat to the world or something that's going to change it radically. Whereas the stories I enjoy are usually in elaborate, different, or sometimes subtly different worlds, but the stories revolve around character and small stakes. And the best example I can give is something like Blade Runner, where a beautiful, wonderful, captivating, dark, problematic, but above all, functioning world has been created. But the story which is told within it doesn't really affect the world at all. It doesn't really have any great ramifications. You could take away that story and the world just trundles along without it. And that's what I like to do. It's what I did with The Spire, to a lesser extent with Godshaper. I like to tell stories that you start with a world, and you come into the foreground and there's a story and you sort of ignore the world to an extent. Mm-hmm. That feels like the most honest way of approaching world building. Otherwise, it's just sort of showing off.
Yeah. God Shaper was really impressive for me. I read recently also. I'm sure I liked it very much. I like the main character.
I wouldn't be at all offended if you said I think I like it, because it's a really weird book to get your head around. I think a lot of people go, I was impressed and it moved me, but I don't know how I feel about it.
I don't know. I think it's got to do with the main character. He was very likable, although he was very, outside the normal again. Okay, and Legion, of course, it's the big thing. I'm not going to talk about the comic book series, because I think you've pretty much told everything about it. But about the TV series, now I think it plays the second season, which I found brilliant. And the first season was also, last year was my favorite series.
That's good to
hear. In television, cool. For me. So, and I noticed that the series wouldn't exist actually without your comic.
Probably, yeah.
I found a lot of similarities and a lot of things they borrowed from your work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, well, I hope that that's true, and it's very nice that you and others have said so. Marvel are very careful to be clear that the Legion TV show is not based on the series I wrote, X-Men Legacy. There are clearly tonal similarities, things which have been, as you say, borrowed. And apart from anything else, I like to think that if my series had not shone some new light on the character, then the interest wouldn't even be there in the first place.
It wouldn't be the same.
Right. So, I mean, that's all lovely, but I have to, just for the sake of not claiming things that I'm not allowed to claim, I have to be careful not to say that the TV show is based on my comic, because something that they're very careful to make sure I don't say.
I know, and people can also see that. I think they wrote in the first episode about... they wrote your name.
Yeah, they did it.
But if you know the producers, did they read your comic book?
I don't know them, and I don't know. All I can tell you is that at the launch party, the premiere of the TV show, they were giving out copies of the trade paperback, so I'm pretty sure it was in the mix.
What about you, the future? I know Coda is coming up next month?
May the 2nd, I think.
May the 2nd. Yep. So probably Greece will come late May.
Right.
So I haven't read anything about it. I don't know.
Oh, man. It's
I've ordered it, but...
It's my new favorite toy.
Okay.
So to go back to what we were talking about before, about functional worlds and then kind of ignoring them, Code is a little different in that the idea starts with a world that we're all very familiar with, which is the sort of quintessential high fantasy story, the kind of World of Warcraft, Lord of the Rings, dragons and wizards and orcs and elves and dwarves and all these things which we're now very, very familiar with in genre. And for years and years, I have been certain that sooner or later I was going to want to write a high fantasy story. Whenever I approached it, I realized that there are just so many cliches, and it all feels like it's been done to death. Yeah. And so I thought, well, you know what, rather than taking one of these worlds and trying to tell new stories in it, why don't I just kill the world? It seems the safest and kindest thing to do. So the starting point of Coda is that one of those high fantasy worlds has been completely destroyed. And the kind of crass elevator pitch version is that as gasoline is to Mad Max, so magic is to Coda. Okay. So this is a world that previously relied upon magic. Everything that happened was because they had access to bloody wizards and dragons and elves and all these things that are when you describe them in these terms, they sound kind of silly, a little bit absurd. And then you wake up in the cold light of dawn after it's all been destroyed, and the main character, whose name is Hum, he describes it as if the whole world has a hangover. It's like we look back into our past and there's this insane fantasy full of these ridiculous, strange, mad things. And we must have taken it seriously at the time, but now it's all gone. We're kind of blinking in the light and going, I can't believe that was really real. Yeah. And that's the whole world. And there's the sort of people, you have to decide if you wake up in this world, whether you are going to get by scrabbling for the dregs of magic that remain, as in Mad Max, the kind of constantly scavenging for gasoline, or whether you try and start afresh and do something different. And that's the tension in the world. And our character, as I was saying before, that's the world, that's this functional paradigm that keeps this world churning. And then we kind of ignore it because our main character just wants to find his wife. That's all he cares about. And there's gang wars and territorial conflicts and scavenging situations going on all around him. And he just doesn't give a crap. All he wants to do is find his wife. And he gets caught up in everything else and has to pick sides and lie through his teeth. And quite early on in the story, we realize that he's sort of lying to himself about exactly what it is that he wants. So anyway, I could waffle about this for hours, but I'm really in love with it. It's the thing I'm kind of very excited about at the moment, and it's beautiful.
Perfect. Wait. The big news came just before you came to our convention,
mm-hmm.
for me, because the Sandman announcement. How did that came about? Like, it feels like you were handpicked by your gang.
Yeah.
All of you, like all the group.
Yeah, I think so. About 2 years ago, when I was not quite as busy as I am now, an email went out from the then editor-in-chief of Vertigo that said that they were interested in doing some more Sandman stuff, and it hinted that Neil was somehow involved, and would I like to pitch some ideas for it? And because I wasn't very busy, but I had enough work coming in that I wasn't troubled at the time, and because I am an arrogant little bastard, I went, nope, I won't do one of your books, I'll do all of your books, and I will only do it if you let me be in charge of it. And they said something like, well, we really respond to your ambition, we'll let you know. And then it all went quiet, and I thought, whoops, I've blown that one. And then stuff happened behind the scenes. I don't know what changed. I imagine they were waiting for the 30th anniversary, which is now coming up. And it just came back out of the blue. And they said, right, we're starting this now. Neil's 100% aboard. He wants you to do... So there are four titles.
Yeah.
There's The Dreaming, House of Whispers, Books of Magic, and Lucifer. And Neil wanted me to do The Dreaming, which is the sort of the flagship title. And we had started from the position of doing some sort of quite elaborate crossover. And we've kind of, there's a little bit of that, but we've moved away from that slightly, mostly because Neil gave us permission to. We had this incredible weekend in New Orleans where Vertigo flew us out for 2 days, really exhausting days, jet lag to hell. And the first time that New Orleans has snowed in years, by the way, so it was quite magical feeling. And we sat in this hotel room with Neil, and we were all quite nervous. Some of us had met him before, some of us had not. And he's the sort of man who just radiates calm. You know, I talk too fast, and I like to fill silence, because that's who I am. That's the way that I deal with anxiety. But Neil, he talks quite slowly, and he picks his words, and everybody else slowly calms down and starts picking their words carefully too. And by the end of this weekend, he had given us permission to not worry and not feel like we had to do something very complicated and convoluted that brought all the threads and strands together, and to just kind of make it up as we went along, but in the most beautiful and story-led way possible. So yeah, it's a little intimidating to inherit a lot of these characters. It being The Dreaming, it is sort of uniquely positioned to approach and directly refer to the fact that we're shifting around the continuity of things. Because there was a whole Dreaming series after Neil finished The Sandman. And what we're saying is, none of that happened, but it happened in one world, in a world. And so I don't know how much you know about the dreaming, but one of the cute things about the dreaming is that there's a library where all the books exist that were never actually written. And so all we're doing is we're saying that somewhere on one of those shelves, all the old dreaming books exist. And so we're sort of starting from the point that Neil finished his Sandman run, where Morpheus is gone. The child who was previously Daniel has become the new dream. And yeah, that's sort of where we pick things up.
It's going to be limited or ongoing?
Ongoing. The artist is Bilquis Eberle, who is chef kiss, absolutely beautiful artist. And yeah, I can't say very much about it because we're being a little secret about stuff, but there's a lot of cool things coming down the pipe.
Perfect. So... Do you see yourself going back to Marvel, X-Men, Legion, something like that, or
hopefully one day? I mean, I'm working with Marvel on the Star Wars book, which is technically a Marvel book, which is it's kind of scratching a particular itch. I'm too busy to do anything else, which is a nice problem to have. One day, I would very much like to do more Marvel stuff, but the privilege of being a writer is that I can be doing a couple of licensed properties and a couple of non-licensed properties.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Sure, no, yeah. It really is a privilege that if I could only do one job at a time, like an artist often does, I would be tormented. Mm-hmm. Because I love superheroes, but I wouldn't want to be doing all superheroes because it feels creatively constrained. I love creator-owned stuff, but I wouldn't want to be doing that all the time because it's terrifying and I haven't got an editor to tell me what to do. And all the shades of grey between those two extremes. So it's really cool to have, I think I've got 4 books on the go at the moment and they sit at all different points on that spectrum. I still have too much work and I'm exhausted all the time, but it's better to have too much than too little.
Yeah, you do a lot and it shows that you have done also books.
Yep.
2 books, Contract and Serpent Uncoiled.
That's right. Yeah, well actually, not that you would know this and there's no reason you should, but before those two I did, I think 6 other novels. But they were all kind of...
Or Warhammer. And...
That's right. Oh, you do know. Well, you did your homework. Excellent work. Yeah, and I was a little bit nervous when I sort of did my own novels when I was doing Contract.
Yeah, but those were property owned. These were completely your own.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's when I took Contract to a publisher. I was concerned that they were going to say, well, you know what, you only... All you've ever done is Warhammer and video games and licensed stuff. Why would we want to hire you? I felt like they would probably be a little bit condescending about it. But actually the opposite happened. It turns out that if you are trying to be a novelist, the biggest problem is not whether you're any good or not, it's whether you can finish a novel. And the world is full of very, very talented prose writers who give up because it's a really hard job. And being able to say to these publishers and agents and editors, look, here are 5 novels I've written before. They're not your cup of tea. They're full of space marines, but I can clearly finish a novel. They went, okay, well, I'll read your first 3 chapters of your strange crime fiction and see what we think. And it worked because they hired me.
Perfect. What are your influences? Do you have
in comics or in all series? Oh heavens, there are too many to list.
You do so much work. You write so much. Do you have time to read? Actually,
not as much as I would like. I find that when I'm writing prose, which is not as much as I would like these days either, I find it very difficult to read fiction because the style and sometimes when I'm reading fiction, it influences what I'm writing when it comes to prose, which can be problematic. So generally, I like to read non-fiction, so I've read a lot of non-fiction lately. Lots of, mostly, I have no reason why, but I've been on a bit of a sort of science fiction
reality bender at the moment. So books about the realities of living in space, traveling to Mars, things like that. I've been reading a lot of that. I'm a subscriber to a magazine called 14 Times. Does that ring any bells with you? It's mind-blowingly brilliant. It's such a weird magazine. It's a monthly magazine which collects news articles from all over the world, which are of a Fortean nature. Fortean being related to the interests of Charles Fort, who was a 19th kind of phenomenist, in that he was interested in folklore and weird goings on and anything inexplicable and a bit strange. And so it's a magazine which is a little bit cynical. It's not credulous in any way. It doesn't sort of take everything with a pinch of salt, but it examines with great entertainment stories about UFO abductions and yetis and Loch Ness monsters. Yeah, and but also sort of examines folklore, weird traditions from all over the world, mass hysteria, just everything, the stuff that I'm really interested in and the stuff that finds its way into my work all the time. So that's a real treat whenever that drops through the letterbox once a month. Don't watch nearly as much TV as I'd like. We've just got through Fargo season 2. Greatly enjoying that. My wife and I play a lot of video games. In fact, that's not true. Recently, this is going to sound really strange, but because I've been so stressed with work, one of my favourite things is to watch her play video games. Oh. Which is, it's supposed to be an interactive art form, but to watch it passively, while occasionally being able to say, oh, you're going in the wrong direction, or turn left here, or shoot that guy, or whatever it is, that's quite a relaxing thing to do. But there it is.
It's nice. So finally, something for our listeners and readers in outside, in Greece. You have something to say?
Simply that having an absolutely wonderful time in Greece. We spent the morning on a very dusty Acropolis. I can't even say it. Acropolis.
Perfect.
And my Greek is appalling. I've tried a couple of times and failed every time. I did some signing this morning with a lot of very friendly people who kept telling me their names, and I kept getting those wrong all the time. So 0 points for language, but hopefully a few points for effort. Yeah, I hope that a lot of my work will make its way through. I'm desperate to learn more about how comics are working here, how the direct market works, because I haven't quite got the handle on that.
Mm-hmm.
Keep an eye out for Coda. I think that's designed to be something that is something which appeals directly to the European sensibility. And I don't know why I think that. It just feels like a very European book. And I mean, I say this as somebody who is still heartbroken about the whole bloody Brexit scenario, so it's just nice to be enjoying Europe while I'm still allowed to call myself a European. But yeah, just thank you for having me.